Yesterday is Isabelle Cottenay, who is a French pronunciation. Sorry, now I'm struggling to speak. By the way, I have a bad cold, so please excuse me if my English isn't as clear as it should be. Isabelle is a French pronunciation coach, and she's an expert in empowering non-native speakers to sound confident and authoritative when they're speaking French. We find that we have a great deal in common in the way that we work with our clients, and we have a lot of insights to share with you today about the challenges for English and French professionals working in the opposite language. Isabelle, thank you for joining us. Do you want to say a little bit about yourself?
Yes, thank you, Aisha, for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation. I recognize a few pictures in the members of the audience. So hi, everybody. Thank you for joining. So as you said, I'm a French pronunciation coach and translator from English and German into French. I'm based in France near Nantes, which is about 40 minutes from the ocean in the south of Brittany. I help language professionals and professionals from various industries to master the music of the French language in order to communicate more clearly and with more confidence.
Thank you, Isabelle. So, the agenda for this discussion is we're going to talk first of all about how the problem presents in the workplace and why it's often a difficult topic to broach in a workplace context and how we'd like to address that. We're going to go on to talk about the business needs of language training for the workplace and the factors involved in effective communication, the challenges in the workplace for English speakers using French and French speakers using English, and finally, the technical aspects of language training for the workplace. Finally, we're going to share some tips about how French and English speakers can communicate more effectively in the opposite language and tell you a little bit more about the training that we do. So, starting off with how does the problem present? What I've seen in my practice, Isabelle, is that when a leader is promoted to management of an international team, that often shines a spotlight on the shortcomings in their communication skills in either English or French. And their spoken language skills may not be clear and authoritative enough to lead an international team, which can lead to a crisis of confidence for that individual. Does that resonate with you?
Yes, it does. You're right. In the workplace, there comes a time when a person either is promoted to a more managerial position or simply because a person accepts a job in another country. I've had the case. So people who are highly functional in another country and are suddenly assigned to another branch of the company, and they are expected to be as fully operational, functional in another language. So this is when the need for language communication skills arises.
That's a very good point. And yet, what I've discovered from speaking to global mobility professionals is that they actually give very little consideration to language skills. They're very busy focusing on, obviously, importantly, housing and education for the family, for the children, and other practicalities to do with moving to a new country. And language skills are often overlooked. I think that global mobility, as with HR, often look at the resume or the CV of the professional and they say, well, this person has a high-level English qualification. They have their IELTS or their CERF certification, so they're going to be okay. And that doesn't take into account the specific challenges of speaking another language, dealing with all the nuances of speaking another language and working in another language in a different country, and the idioms and the small talk, you know, the sort of personal situations that one also has to deal with as well as work. So I feel that unfortunately at the moment the importance of spoken language skills is overlooked for mobile professionals.
Yes, and it's taken for granted that if a person has a particular certification they'll be as proficient in another language. And basically what companies may often do is offer standard English lessons or language skills trainings, but without necessarily taking into account the clarity of the speech and how important it is in communicating efficiently and with impact as well. So it's really something that is a bit different, this work on the clarity of the pronunciation and on the clarity of the communication, the spoken communication in the workplace, something that is not necessarily dealt with in university or in business schools or in other more formal settings.
Those are really important points, Isabel. And I love the fact that you mentioned impact, because when a professional who is a very high functioning professional in their native language struggles to communicate at the same level in another language, they feel that they're not making the same level of impact. And that can affect their confidence. Even very high flying professionals, you know, I've been working with senior professionals in investment management and banking and engineering, and it can be a huge blow to their confidence when they are so competent in their work, but they're struggling to get their points across to their team or to potential clients. And, you know, we're aware of the challenges because of working with professionals, but these challenges are often invisible to, say, a global mobility team, or, you know, the human resources or the line manager. I mean, sometimes these problems are overlooked because it isn't clear where they're coming from. And, you know, just to dip into linguistics, which I'm sure you're all familiar with, we tend to reproduce the habits from our mother tongue. We tend to bring the phonemes from our native language. We tend to bring the rhythm and stress patterns from our native language. And unless we've been trained specifically how to create the sounds of the target language, we're going to bring a lot of material from our own language and also possibly from our own culture. And that may impact our clarity in the target language. Would you agree, Isabel?
Oh, 100%. Yes, I think one of the reasons why we may not sound as clear as we would like to sound in another language is that we import the rhythmic patterns of our native language, and the way people access to the meaning of what we want to say is different depending on the language we're talking. For instance, in English, it is well known that a very important aspect to be understood is really to pronounce the tonic, the stress, in the correct way. If you don't, you may have this, you may produce the sounds correctly, but if the stress patterns is not correct, then it will be harder for your audience to understand you. Whereas in French, it's not quite the same because the music of the language is different, but also because what is more important is how you organize the groups of words in a sentence and how you end your sentence. This is what is really important in French. So we see that there are very, very rational, reasons, objective reasons to why we may not be as clear as we want to be in another language. And learning about these reasons, learning a bit about the linguistics reason, helps our learners better connect in another language.
Yes, and it gives them the confidence to know that first of all, there is a reason why they're struggling to produce these sounds clearly, and also that there is a method and that there is a system by which they can be trained to produce those sounds more clearly. And I would say the first part of that is actually to recognize those sounds. Very often our ear is trained to hear the sounds of our mother tongue, and we just may not be able to decipher sounds in another language that are not familiar to us, and we don't have the habit of the mouth position to produce those sounds. Those are all skills that can be trained.
Yes, absolutely. And if I may just add something to what you said about hearing the sounds, in English and in French, the way the language is spoken, it does not happen. Well, we don't use the same frequencies. We in British English, for instance, the language is spoken through a wider range of frequencies than in French. And in French, it's a very narrow bandwidth, if I may call it that way. And this may also explain why we, as French speakers, may have more difficulties with foreign languages. It's because we don't have that many, our ears are not used to hearing that many sounds, as many sounds as in other languages. And the second thing you were saying is about training the mouth position. Yes, yes, and yes. Of course, this is the basis of our work. And just knowing that the base position of the tongue in both languages is different can make a big difference in the learning process. In French, the base position is at the bottom of the mouth, whereas in English, it's more towards, and you correct me if I'm not, if this is wrong, but it seems to me that it's more in the middle and directed to the top of the mouth. Is it right?
Yes, that's a good observation. I would generally agree with you, Isabel. And I was just thinking, something came to my mind when you were speaking. And I love what you were saying about the bandwidth, because that is an issue with many languages. I mean, for instance, Spanish has a really narrow bandwidth, both in terms of having very few vowel sounds that are native to Spanish and having a sort of even narrower bandwidth than French, I would say. And so Spanish speakers can sound very monotonous when they speak English because they're just not accustomed to producing that wider range of pitches and modulating, you know, within a word, even, you know, within a syllable sometimes we do in English to create that variety of sounds. And I think it's similarly challenging for French speakers. So these are all kind of fine details that we can look at when we're working with someone. I'm just going to take us back, Isabel, to the discussion about how the issues present in the workplace.
Yeah.
There is often a tendency in corporate culture to perceive the accent as a problem that's coming from the learner, from the person that's using English or French as a foreign language, rather than recognizing it as a challenge that comes from the education system, because as we discussed, the education system places so much emphasis on written language, on writing skills, and, you know, much less emphasis on speaking skills. If you sit the IELTS exam, only 25% of the marks come from speaking skills. And, you know, in the education system, there just isn't that much time given to these skills. So really we want to facilitate more discussion around this issue and see it as a diversity issue, as an inclusivity issue, because people need support to work effectively in another language and make the same level of impact that they would make in their own language. So, you know, there is a DEI perspective here as well. I said that correctly. There is a diversity perspective that I'd like to make human resources more aware of, you know, to try and develop an understanding of the issue in the way that we see it as linguists. Isabel, would you like to add anything?
Yes, I agree. That's a good point. And a point that is not taken into consideration, I think. In France, there is a conversation, general conversation about accent discrimination, because it is an issue, just with the different regional accents in French in the country, but also towards people who speak French as an additional language. And this, there are accents that are maybe more accepted than others. So this is directly linked to what you were saying in terms of diversity and inclusion. And the other thing that I wanted to add was when people have to work in another language and it takes them twice or three times as much, they have to work twice as hard to really nail their presentation in their foreign language. And this quantity, this amount of work that they have to do is not necessarily taken into account or acknowledged by their managers. And also they have to really be confident enough in their skills to not be to not feel bad, because when they can see on the faces of people who are listening to them that maybe they're not as clear as they want to be, or it can really take a toll, if that's the correct expression, on their confidence when they are thrown in the lion's den to really, okay, you're going to make this a really strategic presentation for our company in front of an audience, and you have to do it in French if you're English and vice versa. And I mean, this puts a lot of stress. This really can hinder their confidence and make them feel vulnerable. And this is something that people, foreign people working in France often talk about, is the lack of consideration for the work they have to do, for everything that surrounds this challenge.
Yes, really important points. I think it does create a lot of vulnerability, and people that have, in every other respect, seemed very confident can find that loss of confidence when they're faced with this challenge of having to do, as you say, twice as much work to present in the target language. Yes, and you were also making the point about the preference of certain accents. You know, we have similar issues in the UK. For a long time, there was a concept of received pronunciation being the most acceptable form of English, and that was the form that was used by the BBC, by newsreaders, on the radio, and so on. And regional accents, of which we have so many in England and in the UK, were very marginalised. And now that's changing, you know, that's been addressed, and we hear more regional accents on the radio and on television. But it has taken time, and there is still prejudice against certain accents. Certain accents are seen as the butt of jokes, you know, as being inherently comic. And, you know, in a comedy context, of course, that can be very funny. In a workplace context, you don't really want to be seen to discriminate against somebody because of the way they speak. That can affect their confidence. So, sorry, go on as well.
No, go ahead.
Well, just to finish that point, so I know that, you know, France can also be very Paris-centric, and there can be prejudice against people from the south, and I've worked with French people that have spoken to me quite openly about that. So, you know, I think the point in this work is not to give automatic preference to one accent over another, or to say that you must get rid of your French accent altogether, or you must get rid of your English accent altogether, but it's to focus on intelligibility and to find a level of English where the person is clear in their professional context and they feel confident speaking in that way, and they, you know, and it starts to feel natural to them. They don't have imposter syndrome using a clear form of the target language. Your thoughts as well?
Yeah, intelligibility is really the key word there. It's not so much about accent reduction, which is the term widely used in the US, for instance. It's really about gaining clarity, being understood, and feeling authentic when expressing ourselves in another language. And yeah, that's really a key point. And just back to the variety of accents, I think we can also talk about the variety of accents in the target language that we are working on, because this can be also a challenge when we learn a language or when we have to interact in meetings, is really to be able to understand the variety of accents in the other languages. And in France, for instance, I feel, and maybe it's just a feeling, that people are overexposed to US American accents via Netflix or YouTube or whichever platform. And when they have to interact with British people, British clients or partners, it can get tricky to really understand and hear the pitches in English, because again, although it's the same language, well, more or less the same language, British English and American English, the bandwidth is different. And in British English, the pitches are higher and the stress, the tonic is pronounced in a different way. And this makes it difficult for French ears sometimes. Your thoughts on that, Aisha?
Yes, it's an important point. And also in British English, our diphthongs tend to be longer, our vowel sounds tend to be longer than in American English. And there are very interesting historical reasons for that if you look into the history of the language. But absolutely, Isabel, and it's not just for French people. People all around the world are exposed to a lot of American accents from the media. And that can create a lot of confusion, as you say, with British accents, and then even more with regional British accents. And what I tend to say to my clients, I mean, first of all, we do talk about the difference between British and American English, and we can do work looking at that specifically. But ultimately, I say to them, if they've picked up a bit of American English and a bit of British English, it doesn't matter if they speak using a mixture of the two, provided they have some sort of understanding of what they're doing, of how it sounds, and also if they're using words that have a different meaning in US English than they do in British English, that they're clear of the difference in meaning. Because sometimes there are some words that mean the exact opposite. For example, public school in the US, that means a state school, you know, a government school. And in England, it means a private school. And, you know, if a professional comes to England from Turkey and wants to put their children in school, they need to understand the school system and they need to understand what's being talked about when someone talks about a public school.
So, oh, wow.
Yes, I had that situation with a client. So, yes, there's a lot to be said about US and British English. And we can come back to that. I'd like to move on to the business needs of language training for the workplace and talk about changes in the workplace itself, the growing amount of remote work that we're doing, you know, the virtual meetings that people are having, and the new challenges that that presents in terms of intelligibility and, you know, speaking as a team member or leading a team using English in an international context on Zoom or MS Teams. Isabel, would you like to speak to that?
Yes, this poses new challenges because when we communicate, we don't pay attention only to the words. We pay attention to the tone of voice, okay, but also to the body language and to nonverbal cues. And behind our screens, we don't have the whole picture. So, I mean, it focuses on our heads, but some cultures speak more with their hands or communicate other things with their body language. So this is something that disappears when we interact behind our screens. So that's one thing. Regarding the sound, this is an issue that has been brought to my attention through conversations with interpreters. Interpreters do more and more work remotely, so they have the right platforms, the right equipment to interpret live from the comfort of their home office. So they have to wear a headset the whole day, and sometimes they have to interpret people who are talking so without any proper microphone, so the sound comes out as distorted or too compressed, so this can lead to damages to the hearing loss, etc. But that's not the topic today. But the other thing is they also have to interpret people who are talking in their cars or in a very noisy environment, and that can apply also to people who are going in online meetings in noisy rooms. And so this really impedes the communication because there are distractions. This distracts the attention and can make it more complicated to interact in a smooth way. And when it's not your native language that you're listening to, it gets really complicated. So that's a second point that needs to be taken into consideration, is that in this language training for the workplace, training the listening skills is really essential, because it will, in the end, help people also better produce the sounds and better communicate.
Yes, that's a very important point. And I've spoken to business professionals who say sometimes when they hold these online meetings, they have to issue written minutes afterwards just so that they can be sure that everybody understood what was said in the meeting and that everybody was on the same page. So, you know, it can create uncertainty in the workplace culture, not knowing whether everybody understood what was being said in a meeting. And there are so many factors in communicating effectively. Isabel's talked a bit about the non-verbal skills as well. You know, in a workplace context, we're looking at public speaking skills, which are challenging enough in our native language, as we all know. Then there are there's the need to have a grasp of the culture and idioms of the target language. And people are doing good work encouraging people working in an international context to reduce their use of idioms, to make their use of the language being used more neutral, so that it's not so challenging for people using that language as a second language to understand. But nonetheless, idioms are one of the really colourful parts of any language. It would be a shame to lose them. I think it's helpful to learn idioms in the target language and to enjoy using them, and it makes your interactions with native speakers a bit more authentic and a bit more lively. Isabel, how do you feel about idioms?
As a linguist, and as some of my colleagues that I see in the chat that are here, we all love idioms. We know that it's what makes language learning fun, and we like comparing idioms from our native language with the with idioms in our target languages. So this is a really cool thing. But I think it's important to know, well, idioms and phrasal verbs in English, for instance, can make it really hard for French people who have a extended knowledge of English, maybe of global English and not British English. It really can make the conversation more complicated. And you were talking about the clear language. I don't know if it's called clear language in English, this trend or not trend, this awareness that is growing that British English is not the language that is the most widely spoken in the business world, but there's this globish English, if I may call it that way. And so the adjustments need to be made in order for all communities to be able to communicate effectively. And the clear language approach is really interesting. I'm not sure we have the same approach for the spoken French. There is a trend for that promotes the use of clear language in written documentation, in government documents, in official documents. But as far as spoken French is concerned, I don't think there is such an awareness.
Yes, that's very interesting. And of course, globish is becoming a dominant variant as opposed to British English, and that reflects the change in Britain's status in the world stage as well, and the way that technology is changing the way that we speak English. And yes, so to use an idiom, idioms can be a double-edged sword in that sense, that, you know, they are so fun and lively, and it would be a shame to lose them. But on the other hand, they're not always appropriate, they're not always helpful, depending on the context. So that brings us on to vocabulary that's specific to a role, specific to an industry. And this is something that needs attention paid to, because different industries have their own vocabulary, and that vocabulary can be very challenging for somebody speaking a second language. I mean, for instance, in finance, I've worked with quite a few finance professionals. The language is often very technical in English, and it has a lot of consonants and a lot of consonant clusters. And these don't exist in other languages, and it can be very difficult for a French speaker to create the kind of muscularity of those consonant clusters, which in a way, as English speakers, we hear authority when we hear someone using those consonant clusters in a very clear, muscular way. And, you know, I'm going to slow down and over-articulate a little bit to try and illustrate what I'm talking about. And I do have a cold, so I apologize that my voice isn't as clear as it usually is, but hopefully you can understand what I mean. If I was a politician presenting, I would be speaking in quite an emphatic way and making my consonants very crisp. And that doesn't always come naturally to a French speaker, would you say, Isabel?
Oh, yes, that's a really good point. It's a musical point, I think, because I would say that English is more percussive than French, which is a vowel language. French is places the emphasis on the clarity of the vowels, whereas English, as you said, has lots of consonant clusters and rhythm. I would need also to pay more attention to my consonants, I think, if I were to be more impactful. That's true. And this is one of the aspects that we have to deal with when working with people who want to be impactful in their industry. I was thinking, it's just something that crossed my mind because I wrote a short post about Dr. House, but in the health industry, I mean, in the hospital for doctors, or they also have to be able to communicate on long words, long technical words of medicines, of this has to come out in a clear way too. So I was thinking, because watching old episodes of Dr. House's and marveling at how they mastered the pronunciation of these super long medical terms was quite impressive. That was just a side note. Yes, the differences in the sounds of our two languages play a part in the impact we want to make in the public speaking setting. That's true.
I love the example of medical terms because, of course, that's super technical and very important to get right. There could be serious consequences if there was misunderstanding there. Yeah. So really nice example. Thank you, Isabel. We also talked about English and French speaking etiquette being different and context dependent, and also sometimes varies according to the generation, as we see a tendency towards less formal language in younger generations. There's sometimes a need to be aware of different registers within a language, I would say especially for French, and which to use in different contexts. And Isabel, when we've spoken about this, you've talked about contractions being used more in informal registers in French. So sometimes, you know, one needs to become aware of these subtle differences in registers and what that can convey about us as speakers.
Yes, and it also can be challenging to understand when you've only studied the language in books or in a more formal context, and you can be baffled, if that's the word I may use, when you hear people speak, because it doesn't have much to do with what you're used to reading in books. So, back to the consonants also, I will just give an example. In French, you would say in a book you would read, je te rencontrerai à 3 heures. I will meet you at 3 o'clock. Je te becomes j'te. J'te rencontrerai, ou j'te verrai. So there's really a switch in sounds, and non-natives really have to be aware of those and to know that the informal form should not be used in a very formal meeting, for example. You wouldn't say that in a meeting with the big boss of your company. So we have to, as language coaches and intonation and pronunciation coaches, we also have to explain to our clients the particular settings where it's appropriate to speak in that way or in that way. Another issue that comes up very often is the use of the informal address tu. There's you, because in French we have two ways of saying you. We say tu in an informal setting or conversations, and vous in a formal conversation. But the lines are changing, are moving, and the informal form is getting more traction, is more widely used and more systematically used by the younger generations in startups, for example. And it is getting, I would consider it, it's trickier today to know when to use the tu and when not to use it. So there's, again, cultural awareness around these issues that we need to clarify to help our clients navigate comfortably in their environment.
Very much so, and I'm very conscious when I'm in France that I use vous with elder people and tu with people that are contemporaries or sometimes younger. And I'm wondering, you know, about the different mindsets that we may need to occupy. For instance, if we're used to working in startup culture and we're used to being in a very sort of level field and being informal, if someone was transplanted from that environment to a more formal workplace culture, would they be able to adjust their persona? And the issue of personas is something that interests me very much, because I think sometimes we have to not only create a workplace persona, but then create a second language workplace persona that meets all the needs of that workplace. And it may not be how we use that language in a different context. If we're working in another country and we go to a grocery store, we may not bring our workplace persona to that context. And I think it's helpful to think of personas, because it gives a kind of defined role to the task of trying to communicate as, you know, speaking French as an English speaker or speaking English as a French speaker. It kind of defines the role a little bit more. And, you know, we can employ acting skills, even if we don't think that we have them. I'm sure that we do use them. And that's something that I work consciously with clients to make them think about, you know, what is my English speaking persona like? How is he different from my French persona? Or she? I'm sorry to be gender specific there.
Yeah.
Yes, you know, we can also have fun with this. There's a real element of play in speaking another language. And this is one of the really, you know, I would like it to be a fun aspect even in the workplace and not to become a source of anxiety and stress for the reasons that we discussed earlier.
Yeah, this is a really good point, the point about persona. And I like the fact that you're using the word persona, because it also can be helpful for people who are afraid of losing a part of their identity if they start to work on their pronunciation. Because this is something that comes back quite often with the people I work with, is they have to, it's a process. I mean, it's a process to grow into your second language persona or a second language persona for the workplace or for private life, or all these different personas. But it also, it creates both a proximity with our other self in the other language, and it keeps it at the right distance. Meaning, this will not change who I am in my native language or who I am, my identity, but it just gives me the opportunity to play a little bit, as you were saying, because the playing aspect is very important when we want to connect with our second language. And this is, I think, a major point, this connection aspect that we have to help our clients develop with their second language. And in order to do that, I think you use a bit of techniques from the theater or so. I use techniques from the musical derived from my musical background. Can you tell me maybe a little bit more about your how you get your inspiration from the theater or to help your customers get into their second language persona?
Absolutely. Well, there is a strong element of play at work here where we ask the client to think about how they would like to appear as an English speaker and what characteristics they would like their English speaker persona to have. And, you know, that character might even have a name. But the idea is to create someone that they can bring to the workplace or to English speaking meetings or to client negotiations or sales, and be that persona consistently without having that sense of imposter syndrome. And, you know, once you have a character like that created, you can come back to it and sort of put on the costume mentally whenever you need to. And I liked what you were saying about people not wanting to lose their identity in their native language. I think that is a factor for people. And often when they go home for the holidays and spend time with their family and they're speaking their native language, let's say it's French, when they come back to their English-speaking workplace, there's that tricky moment of transition that, you know, how do I find my English-speaking persona again when I've been speaking French for a month with my family and friends back home? So if they've created this persona and they know how this persona is, how they behave in the workplace, how they use rhythm and word stress to make an impact with their speech, it's easier for them to find their way back into that role. And, you know, in the same, you know, it's another aspect of their role. If their job has specific roles assigned to it, their English speaking qualities are additional qualities of their role. So, you know, we have fun sort of creating this, and it gives them a space to think about it that otherwise wouldn't be available to them. It takes a lot of the struggle element out of the work and turns it into play.
Yeah, that's interesting. I might borrow the idea.
Sure. I'd like to see more of that.
Yeah, that's interesting. And that's why it's also, I don't know if you use that, I suppose so, but I often tell my clients to watch how people are speaking. I mean, if I suggest, okay, you can take a video and, okay, you listen to the sounds, etc., but also watch their behavior, what they do with their body, and try to replicate that as well, because this is the first step in the process you were mentioning, I think, is really to become aware of what would define or characterize a French speaker. Okay, well, the mouth doesn't move a lot is something they often tell me. And we are maybe less emphatic than US American speakers, for instance. But just paying attention to those small details helps get into our persona, our second language persona.
Yes, it is very much about detail and observation and becoming more aware of differences, I would say. Isabel, I'm aware that we've been speaking for over 40 minutes now, and it might be a good time to open up the discussion to the floor. So if anybody would like to speak, I think you have the option to raise your hand, or otherwise, please just unmute yourself and speak if anyone has a question for us. No questions at this point. Okay, well, we'll carry on speaking. Something I'd like us to discuss is, at what point do people become aware of the need to work on their pronunciation?
That's the heart of the topic. It is a very sensitive issue all the time, because there's an element of frustration. Because sometimes people have studied the language for a very long time. They've mastered the grammar, the vocabulary, they've been in the country for a while, and still they are not understood as clearly as they would like to and don't know how to address that. So there's suffering, I say, and they become aware of it when they are thrown in the lines then, as I was saying, when they have to really go public, and it shows that they see it as a vulnerability. Sometimes, I mean, having an accent is not a problem. You said it very clearly. It is not a problem. The thing is, when it gets in the way of being understood, then this is a time when people start to realize that there may be ways to work on that, to improve that. And they see it most of the time in the eyes of their other people they're talking to, or when people ask them to repeat, or this is what people often tell me, or when the people they're speaking to switch into another language. In France, if they are trying to speak French and the people they're talking to is switching to English, that can be insulting because they're making the effort. They want to communicate in the language, and this wish is being denied.
Yes, one actually hears that quite a lot about French speakers, and I don't know whether it's a cultural trait that when English speakers are struggling to express themselves in French, they'll often get a reply in English, and so they lose the opportunity to practice and improve, you could say. And Isabel, what do you think would be the ideal way to suggest to someone in the workplace that they would benefit from working on their pronunciation without hurting their feelings?
Oh, that's... I don't know. Quite honestly, I don't know. I think this is a very tricky question because there's also this cultural aspect of how we give feedback. The way we give feedback in France is very different from how it is given in English-speaking countries. We tend to be more blunt or blunter, more direct, maybe. And maybe a way to go about this would be to organize conferences on the topic. Conferences about the differences between, conferences or workshops on the specificities, the specifics of the French language. Maybe yeah. That would be a way.
Yes, and I think even having discussions like the one we're having now are an important way of raising awareness about this issue. And, you know, I'm hoping that we can have more of these discussions, Isabel, because it's absolutely fascinating talking to you and seeing how many of the same issues have arisen for both of us working with people in the professional environment, and still how much raising of awareness there needs to be about the challenges that this can present. Otherwise, I think people are suffering in silence and struggling in a workplace context. And this problem, not only is it not going to go away, there's going to be more as workplaces become more and more international, as remote working becomes more and more the norm. We're going to see more and more of this issue, and we'd like to start tackling it now before, you know, it becomes a major issue and a source of stress for people in their workplace. Yeah. Isabel, do you think there are some patterns or common personality traits among people who seek help for this, for their spoken language skills?
From my experience and from what I've heard and seen, very often the people who seek help are perfectionists. They are excellent at their work and they want to be excellent at languages as well. So they are super performers, I would say. Also language professionals, because of their indulgence, because of their love of languages, to put it simply, or because it gives them a competitive edge if there are interpreters, for instance, so they know that it's crucial. But generally speaking, yes, people who have customer-facing positions, maybe, who need to interact. And but I talked about our topic with a friend the other day, and he said, well, what about if a sales rep still signs contracts, has a thick accent, but is a great performer in his company, should he ask for help with his pronunciation? And then I answered, No, if it's not a problem in his interactions, in his communication, and if he performs well, and if he's comfortable, and there are no misunderstanding issues, then no, he doesn't need any help with his pronunciation, which is not the case if it gets in the way of intelligibility.
Absolutely, and that will depend on the context and on the individual and some other factors. I've had senior French finance professionals saying to me that they are worried that they're losing sales because of their accent. And these are, you know, I think French are often the holders of the perfectionist mentality that you mentioned. At least that's how it seems to me, because they're often the most eager to work on their pronunciation and to improve. And you know, that makes them delightful to work with because they are very interested in the process, and they also put in the work, which as trainers we like to see. We like them to see that they've gone away and done their practice and used the exercises that we've given to them. So where does that take us? What feedback have your clients given to you, Isabel, when they've gone through this process? How has it helped them?
Oh, it has helped them with confidence. That's really the thing that comes back most often is people have been complimented on their pronunciation. That makes them feel good, more confident. And they feel more authentic in the way they communicate. And they know that they are practical ways of working on their accent, as they say, because when they come to me, they talk about their accent. They don't talk to me about their pronunciation. So knowing that there are ways to address it is really comforting for them. And what they tell me is, oh, my confidence, I feel much more confident talking with French people now. So that's the biggest takeaway, yes.
I agree. I think it's very much about confidence, and that works on so many levels. I mean, sometimes it's just more confidence that they now know how to say certain words that they didn't even know they were pronouncing incorrectly, or they get feedback from their line managers. You know, very often they get workplace feedback saying that their clarity has improved, and that leads to more confidence. And sometimes they just feel that their team is more receptive or is able to understand them better, and that also gives them much more confidence. So it works across several levels, and you know, it really increases the sense of well-being as well. And I think it's important to see this skill as linked to well-being and self-esteem.
Yes, and if I may just interrupt for 1 second, they also feel better engaging in small talk conversation, which is really important in the workplace and in everyday life as well.
Very much so. And, you know, that really rounds out the experience for them and makes them feel more at home if they're working in a new country. So that's a very important point, Isabel. So we're coming towards the end of our discussion. Would you like to share a little bit about, I mean, we've both talked about how we work with people. I have a specific program which is called English Mastery for Global Professionals, and it's a kind of 360-degree program where we work on phonetics, we work on the rhythm and the word stress, we work on the vocabulary that's specific to that industry or the work, you know, the workplace that the learner is in. We work from a theatrical perspective, we work from a musical perspective, and also the courses are targeted to actually to the native language of the learner. So the way I would work with a French speaker is different to the way I would work with a Spanish speaker, because Spanish speakers have different vowels and sounds in their language, and there are different sounds that they struggle with in English. So it's a very targeted course, but it's also very kind of broad and flexible. And you know, you can come for 5 hours, you can come for 10 hours, you can come for 20 hours, and you get a lot of support material. And all the details are on the Pronounce Me website. Isabel, would you like to say a little bit about how you work with your clients?
I work online exclusively. So I offer online and individual online classes and small and classes for small groups from 2 to 4 students. I mostly work with language professionals, so we go deep into phonetics because this is something that is really helpful for them, and we compare, I draw comparisons with their native language And I mostly work with people, English speakers, Spanish speakers, German and Italian speakers. So West European native speakers. People can send me a message on LinkedIn or email me at isabel@secureyourpronunciation.com, the English spelling, if they want to know more. I'm putting up a website that will be published in the coming days or next week, probably. The way I work is, like I said, online, and I provide all the support material after each session, so audio files to practice, documents with the content of the class, of the course, and also feedback via video when they do readings, and I can comment on those readings to help them improve in between sessions. So that's the type of work I do for now.
Thank you, Isabel, for giving us the information. And similarly, if you'd like to work with me and you'd like to know more about Pronounce Me, you're free to send me a message on LinkedIn, or you can contact me via the website or send me an email at training@pronounceme.co.uk. So I'm going to round up our discussion here. Isabel, thank you so much for your participation. It's been fascinating. One last opportunity to the floor. If anybody has a question that they'd like to ask now, please unmute yourself. Otherwise, you can always message either of us with your questions or any points requiring clarification. Okay, thank you very much, Isabel. I look forward to holding future discussions with you. This has been absolutely delightful and fascinating.
Yes, thank you very much, Aisha. I had a great time. It was really enlightening.
Okay, all the best. See you soon. Oh, yes. Babakar has a question. Do you have a question for us? No, he's just showing appreciation. Thank you all very much.
Thank you. Thank you for everybody who attended.
Yes, thank you very much for attending, and look forward to seeing you again soon. Bye for now.
Okay. Bye-bye, Aisha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.